I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. The battle between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney for the White House is underway. Here's what the president said about the Republican Party on Wednesday night in Denver.
I don't know how they've been bamboozling folks into thinking that they are the responsible, fiscally disciplined party. They run up these wild debts. And then when we take over, we got to clean it up. And they point and say, look how irresponsible they are. Look at the facts. Look at the numbers. And now I want to finish the job.
Mr. Obama doubled down on his criticism of his opponent last night at the Iowa State Fairgrounds, saying that Romney's experience in private finance explains his worldview that corporations are people. Mitt Romney criticized the administration's education policies this week at the Latino Coalition's annual economic summit in Washington, D.C.
Here we are in the most prosperous nation on earth, but millions of our kids are getting a third world education. And America's minority children suffer the most. This is the civil rights issue of our era, and it's the greatest challenge of our time.
Governor Romney was in West Philadelphia yesterday speaking at Universal Bluford Charter School. There were protests outside the school and some tough questions from teachers inside the school. Well, here to talk campaign politics are Dick Pullman. He writes a blog called National Interest for WHYY's NewsWorks site. He also writes a weekly column for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he's writer in residence at the University of Pennsylvania. And Dick Pullman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Also with us is Robert Costa, and he's a political reporter for National Review, a political analyst for CNBC, and he's only ever been a guest on the phone, and now he joins us here in our Philadelphia studios as well. And Robert Costa, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's wonderful to be here.
Well, let me begin with you, if I could, Robert, which is, are we ready in the throes of what will be a nasty and negative political campaign season?
I think you're seeing right now in late May, they're taking their opening punches. This is going to be a nasty brawl. But you see Mitt Romney and Barack Obama doing interesting things. When Mitt Romney comes to Philadelphia and he talks about education, he knows that the African-American vote is going to be very hard to get for Republicans. So as a political analyst, you look at this and you say, what's he really doing? And I think he's reaching out to independents. He's signaling that he cares about education, that this is an important issue for him. Barack Obama, I think, has been damaged a bit in recent weeks for his attacks on Bain Capital, especially from the return fire from Democrats like Cory Booker in Newark, the mayor there. And so I think what Barack Obama is doing is trying to reassert himself as a leader. He's trying to bounce back the attack mode and play president and say that Mitt Romney may point his fingers, but I'm the one trying to solve problems in Washington. And so you see a persona almost calcifying on both sides of who they're going to be.
Dick, let me turn to you. I'm actually picking up on the Bain story. Do you think that's fair game for the president to go after Romney and Bain Capital?
Well, it's fair game in the sense that Romney has made his private sector experience sort of a centerpiece of his campaign, saying, you know, I've lived in what he would call the real world of the economy, and he knows how to create jobs, and he certainly sees the economy as the central issue, which it is, and so in that sense he has put it on the table. Whether it works or not, we'll have to determine. I think one of the interesting things I find about what Robert just mentioned, part of the sort of the blowback even within the Democratic camp from Cory Booker and even Ed Rendell is another example, over the use of Bain Capital, is there it's actually a symptom of a larger Democratic debate that's been going on for many, many years about what the party should – how should the party present itself? Is it the populist party of sort of, you know, the little guy versus the big guys on Wall Street, and or is it the party that should sort of be more sort of centrist, right, and have kind of a broader economic message as opposed to sort of picking winners and losers, which, you know, the Democratic Leadership Council and all these centrist Democratic groups used to argue. It's part of that. When I've seen this disagreement over the strategy, I think, right, that's what it how it manifests itself in this.
And I do want to play that Cory Booker comment, but let me go back to you, Robert, which is, interestingly, while the president was attacking Mitt Romney's record at Bain Capital, he, I think, the same night was going to someone's very fancy apartment in New York and passing the hat for money.
This is the story of politics. One minute wagging your finger at business, the next minute taking out your wallet and asking for donations. But I think Dick brings up a really interesting point about what does the Democratic Party believe in? And I think President Obama is walking a fine line with his attacks on Bain Capital, because there is an argument to be made against private equity, and that's a complicated argument. You have to define what private equity is, which a lot of people fail to understand. You have to make an argument against it. What President Obama risks doing with these attacks is sounding just broadly anti-business, and I think that's a risk for the Democrats, who are able to win over independent types, small business owners in 2008. And if the president goes too hard against private equity, he may risk losing some of those Democratic businessmen.
But what I also have heard the president say, I think probably in response to what Cory Booker said as well, which is to kind of single out, saying, yes, there is a place for private equity, but job creation is not the job of private equity. The job of private equity is to make money for stockholders.
And sure.
Now, that might be, you know, a fine difference here.
Right, but the problem for, I think, the president is that that's true. The purpose of private equity, of course, is to create profit. But the problem is for the president is that it's not just to create profit. It's to get companies out of debt, and it is to create jobs. That's not the explicit purpose of private equity, but it's part of the capitalist system. It's part of the enterprise. And to think that jobs creation is not part of the equation, I think, is odd.
Well, let me play the comment that Newark Mayor Cory Booker made on Meet the Press. This was on Sunday. It's been played a lot, but nonetheless, here he is discussing the Obama campaign's ad attacking Mitt Romney's record at Bain Capital. Let's listen.
This kind of stuff is nauseating to me on both sides. It's nauseating to the American public. Enough is enough. Stop attacking private equity. Stop attacking Jeremiah Wright. This stuff has got to stop, because what it does is it undermines to me what this country should be focused on. It's a distraction from the real issues. It's either going to be a small campaign about this crap, or it's going to be a big campaign, in my opinion, about the issues that American public cares about.
Dick Pullman, let me turn back to you. Interesting response this week to what Cory Booker was saying there. What do you think his message was, and did he make a mistake, do you think, for the Obama campaign?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a broader issue here about surrogates. And this use of you had surrogates go out there, and if they stray from the message, then you kind of ask, you know, what's the point of a surrogate? On the other hand, if the surrogate is just going to be out there echoing the message, then what's the point of the surrogate?
Right.
It's interesting that now this is probably, Marty, not quite the answer you were.
That's okay.
On a question.
You can give me whatever you want.
I'm answering a question you didn't you didn't ask. President Obama's out there basically carrying the ball this week, directly going after Romney by name. And I don't know, one of the jokes I heard the other day was, well, he's decided to go out and do it by name because the surrogates aren't doing it for him. But, you know, it's tricky. Again, it is complicated because Cory Booker has himself had a lot of contributions from private equity. It's kind of, you know, Ed Rendell, I believe, works for a law firm here in Philadelphia that does a lot of business with private equity. So, you know, I mean, I suppose the simplistic shorthand would be to say, well, of course, you know, they've already been, you know, bought and paid for. But it's, again, more complicated than that, because as Robert was just saying before, you have you also have the Obama administration getting having campaign contributions from people who do private equity type work, and they're still sort of attacking the hand that feeds them. So I don't know, you know, which is the more virtuous.
Well, but the other side of this as well is the fact that companies like that Bain invested in, also there were tax breaks, subsidies, grants, money from, you know, state and local governments to help these companies as well. So you hear from conservatives and Republicans and even the candidate Mitt Romney himself about the problem of government. But nonetheless, they need government for a lot of these deals that they have worked out.
Oh, Bain Capital is far from a perfect company, and it has surely been involved with government deals over the years that have helped its growth, that has helped its business. But I think the broader argument here is not whether Bain Capital at some point got a federal subsidy. It's, did Bain Capital do good things as a capitalist enterprise. Ted Kennedy in 1994, when he ran against Romney, used this company called AMPAD, a steel company in Indiana, to great effect. And Ted Kennedy was behind the polls in late summer of 94, but ended up trouncing Romney by double digits because he just kept running against Bain Capital. But I think the president is going to have a real struggle here, because Bain Capital, as much as it had its own problems with maybe federal handouts, with having job losses, at its core, the American people are going to have to judge, was this a poor enterprise? Was this something we are going to discourage in America? Or even with all of its warts and all of its flaws, was this trying to do something good for our capitalist system?
But, Dick, it seems to me that underneath it all, this is the argument about jobs and job creation. And it seems that jobs and the broader economy is what's really at stake in this presidential election.
It is. And you know, it's inescapable that Romney has had difficulty quantifying how many jobs were created during his tenure at Bain Capital. There was one of his former stump lines was, I believe, that it was in excess of 100,000. And then they've downgraded that now. Now they're saying thousands or maybe 10,000. So the number has always been fungible. And the reason it's fungible is because of the fact that job creation was not a priority at Bain by definition, and they weren't really keeping, you know, hard and fast figures on that they could then cite with any kind of confidence. So that number has been very, very elusive, and I'm sure the Obama campaign will point to that, as they will again the job creation record in Massachusetts, which there's a common thing that the Obama campaign's been using, saying it was 47th in job creation during Romney's tenure. I don't believe the Romney people have been able to necessarily dispute that figure. They can say yes, but, you know, but yes, but is not where you want to be in politics. And it's also inescapable that, and it's known that, you know, Romney's polls when he was perhaps would have been normally running for re-election as governor in Massachusetts, his polls were very, very, very tenuous back in early 06, and it just happened to be that's when he sort of decided not to run again and to instead go for president. So, there has been no talk of an alleged Massachusetts miracle, let's put it that way.
Well, about a minute before our first break here, but Robert, back to you. And what one senses this election season is that no time can go by between an accusation and a response.
Oh, that's the nature of this game. I cover presidential politics every day, and it is almost, to use Cory Booker's word, nauseating the way they keep hitting each other on these small issues. But I think Mitt Romney's point is that you can always quibble about the numbers he had in Massachusetts or at Bain Capital, but he's still running in an economic election as a candidate whose entire record is based on his economic success, and I think he's in a pretty strong position.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking politics today on Radio Times, specifically looking at the race that's heating up between President Barack Obama and Governor Mitt Romney. It looks pretty official that Mitt Romney will be the Republican candidate. Robert Costa is a political reporter for National Review, also a political analyst for CNBC. Dick Pullman writes a weekly column for the Philadelphia Inquirer, also writes a blog called National Interest for WHYY's Newsworks website, and writer in residence at the University of Pennsylvania. Give us a call. Questions, comments, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with continuously controlled damping, or CCD. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
WHYY is proudly supported by the new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro. This new hospital is now open. It was designed with all single-patient rooms and innovations that may help improve healing and lower infections. Features include a rapid-response emergency room and physicians from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to care for children. The new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro, redefining care. Now open. More at PrincetonHCS.org.
Bring your appetite, food fanatics, as WHYY celebrates some of the region's greatest culinary minds with Best of the Chefs, a two-hour tasting featuring an array of area restaurants, breweries, and businesses. They'll serve up their tastiest treats, and your votes decide who is crowned Best of the Chefs in several mouth-watering categories. Also, a raffle, beer garden, and live music, Thursday, June 21st. Tickets at whyy.org/member experience.
The Philadelphia Inquirer proudly supports WHYY. The Inquirer recently won the 2012 Pulitzer Prize for Public Service Journalism for its Assault on Learning multimedia investigative series. News and more. The Inquirer. Your life. Your stories.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking about what looks like to be a bruising election season leading up to November, talking with Robert Costa, who writes for National Review Online, or National Review, I guess, or both.
We have a website and a magazine. Please read both.
Okay, fair enough. Dick Pullman blogs for WHYY's Newsworks, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Why, Dick, let me ask you about super PACs. And of course, these are what appear to be wealthy, either individuals or groups of people that are just pouring millions of dollars into this political season. Any way to know what their effect will be? I mean, we're sort of in the beginnings of all of this, but nonetheless, an avalanche of money.
I mean, I think one effect we can pretty much count on is that most voters by maybe mid-October will be completely exhausted. If the flood of ads on TV is going to be what we expect it to be. The real question is, how much in the end is this going to influence the election? I mean, it's problematical. I tend to think the election's going to be really, really close, no matter how much input comes at voters. One common fallacy, I think, is that the more and more super PACs you have, the more and more influence they're going to have, and that any message they put out is going to influence people. But I think we saw an incident, an episode last week, I think it was last week, which actually goes to show that what super PACs don't do is also important. When there was the New York Times broke this story that was obviously leaked to them by this debate within one of the anti-Obama super PACs about whether to bring back Reverend Jeremiah Wright, as an issue, the 2008 oldie but goodie. And it was decided finally, and after the story broke, within hours after the story broke, the people who were connected with the super PAC said, "We're not doing it. We're distancing ourselves. We don't want to have anything to do with that." I think still there is, there's this there. And I think that kind of speaks to the notion is just because you have a lot of money and just because you have a big forum for a message, it doesn't necessarily mean that your message is going to overwhelm all the other messages that are out there.
Especially if there are counter messages that are pushing back. Go ahead, Rob.
I think the super PACs is a key element to understanding what's happened in the 2012 presidential race. And as a reporter in Washington, I recently met with some heads of conservative super PACs, and I asked them this exact question: what's different about this year and what you're doing? Now, in previous cycles, we used to have the presidential campaigns, the candidates would have their money in their ads, and then you'd have the party apparatus. The RNC would have ads, a ground operation, and they would do their, so you had two entities. Now, you add in the super PACs, it changes the entire mix, because super PACs now can take millions of dollars of these donations and really control the television airwaves. And so the party apparatus, the RNC and the DNC, now really are just get out the vote operations on the ground. And so you have the parties, which used to run the national television campaigns, are out of the picture, and you have these independent groups really running the television commercials and campaign ads. And so it's really different because now campaigns and the parties don't really have control over the main messages that are getting to voters. And I think it brings up a lot of questions for both parties as they deal. They like the money that's flooding into these races, but they're not going to have the control they used to have in previous cycles.
Yeah, go ahead, Dick. Looks like you want to add something.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, they don't, and earlier versions of these kinds of PACs we didn't call them super PACs, but we did have these independent entities before, and there was no control. I think arguably one of the differences now is that a lot of these super PACs are run, not all of them, but a lot of them are run by people who were very closely associated with or aligned with or affiliated. Yeah, or they're former advisors to the candidates.
Or maybe current advisors. It's too messy, I think.
So they have, the campaigns don't have control over them, but a lot of these super PACs are so wired into the thinking of the campaigns that they can still reflect the message. And so they may not be as out of control as they were perhaps in the past.
Well, and it feels like
no
a kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Oh, right? I think it's a major problem that we're going to be hearing a lot more about because there's so many super PACs, as Dick mentioned, who are run by senior top aides to both Democrats and Republican lawmakers, candidates, and now, for the entire primary process, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama with his Democratic super PACs have always been able to say, oh, no, I have no involvement with this. I can't comment on it. But as you say, this is going to be a nasty race, and the super PACs are going to be controlling the television commercials, and there's going to be some really hard stuff out there. Maybe not the Jeremiah Wright type of thing, but it's going to be at that level. And Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are going to have to answer questions about – You may say you're not closely associated with the organization of these PACs, but really, do you have any kind of responsibility for the message that's going out there?
But don't you think, Dick, also that the press plays a role here in that the Jeremiah Wright criticism that didn't end up being on the air was talked about relentlessly all week by the media on cable television and probably other television as well. Mm-hmm. So they sort of get their message out without having to get their message out.
Well,
you know
that's
what I mean?
That. I mean, what's also interesting. Yes, I mean, free media, as it's known, free media has a huge amount of, you know, a super PAC can announce they're going to put an ad out. They can do a very, very small ad buy. But then it gets written, you know, it gets written in the papers, it gets aired on the cable shows in the evening, and everybody talks about it. And so, you know, the message gets out there, and they don't have to put the money out there. Right. So in some way, you know, it's inevitable, though, that, you know, it's hard not to cover it. And, I mean, everybody has an interest. Everybody has an interest in these super PAC messages for their own purposes. The journalism does because it's grist for us to talk about, and they bring up issues we want to talk about, either substantive or strategic. And then you also have the TV stations. Let's not forget. You know, those are where they go. And I was at an event last week. I talked at an event a week ago, and somebody plaintively raised their hand and said, "Well, can't the TV stations just refuse to air them?" And I tried not to laugh because, I said, "Ma'am, this is their bread and butter, and they need this revenue, and it is huge, and it will be huger than ever."
Let me go back to you, Robert. Then we'll get to some callers. And I'm thinking about the Republican primary, which was also a pretty bruising primary. Certainly had its bruising moments, but it seems like the Democrats are using some of the criticism used by Republican candidates against Mitt Romney. I think it was Rick Perry who talked about vulture capitalism.
Sure.
Newt Gingrich, you know, had that whole, I forget,
30-minute Bain video.
Exactly, where that it sort of ripped, you know, Romney and Bain apart. It seems like the Republicans have done a lot of the dirty work for the Democrats.
You're right. And I think we are going to see the Democrats gleefully use the Newt Gingrich footage and Rick Perry footage from the primaries in their campaign ads and their online efforts. But I do not think that Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum are going to turn this election, and that I don't think a voter is going to take a cue from some pot shot during the primary.
You agree, Dick?
Well, yeah, I mean, they want to say, well, Newt Gingrich said this or Rick Perry said this. But meanwhile, you know, they spend most of their time tearing down Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry, who has the highest negative approval disapproval ratings of any modern politician, and Rick Perry, who bombed out. So, you know, I don't really see that being, you know, an effective tactic.
And that's Dick Pullman. He writes for WHYY's Newsworks. Also with us is Robert Costa. He writes for National Review, National Review Online. And we're talking about politics today on Radio Time, specifically the race to the White House. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get John from Malvern to join us on Radio Times. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. I like your show, Marty. Thanks
Thank you.
A lot.
Thank you.
My question is just noting that the Republican primaries, and now with Romney running, there hasn't been one mention of the former Republican president, George W. Bush. Can they go through a whole campaign without mentioning his name, even though most or many of Romney's policies are very similar to his?
Well, let me put that to you, Robert Costa.
I think the Bush question is hanging over this election, but not in the way it hung over the 2008 campaign. President Obama, I think, was really able not to run against John McCain, but to run against George W. Bush 4 years ago. Romney's team is full of many Bush alumni. You have many Bush advisors working for Romney. But I think there is a sense, at least within Mitt Romney's campaign, that Barack Obama cannot run against George Bush again. And that they may try to – Barack Obama may try to look at how he was able to accomplish the stimulus, getting over some economic trouble and getting past the Bush years. But I think Bush is 4 years ago now, and it's faded a tad. I think the caller makes a good point that it is a part of the campaign discussion, but it's not the central discussion like it was in 2008.
But it seems more likely to say Jeb Bush than George W. Bush. Well, go ahead, Dick.
Jeb Bush, I think one of the reasons he may have decided not to get involved in any high-profile way in this campaign is he wants to perhaps wait four more years just to make sure the brand is solid again. On his brother, George W., you may have noticed last week, I guess it was, a very interesting form of endorsement from George W. Bush, where basically he said, "I'm for Romney," as elevator doors were closing. I guess the people were asking. So that was one of the more interesting backhanded endorsements. But he's really trying to stay low key. I mean, I think what Robert said, there's many Bush alums in his and it's interesting also on his foreign policy team. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about foreign policy in this election. There's a huge Bush alum group in his foreign policy team, including a number of them who have never quite said that Iraq was a mistake. But that's a whole separate topic. It's interesting, the public opinion polls about Bush, about George W. Bush's tenure, are really, really interesting because it's, on the one hand, they basically say that most people still, I don't say most people, but maybe it's a plurality, still blames George W. Bush's tenure as being sort of a principal reason for the recession and the economic mess we're in. On the other hand, even though they believe that, that doesn't necessarily mean that Obama should campaign on it, because people can say, okay, we know George Bush put us in there, but, you know, what are you going to do to get us out of it, and don't go looking back 4 years? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons we really haven't heard Obama say that. I think he tries to do it sort of indirectly by saying that his idea that the Romney people want to bring back the policies that got us into this mess, you know, which is sort of like Bush subliminal, but not overt.
Well, do you think the question, are you better off today, Robert, do you think that that's a winning question in today's political / economic environment?
At least from the Republican perspective, it is. I think Mitt Romney's campaign is running echoes of Ronald Reagan's 1980 campaign, and with a little bit of Bill Clinton's 92, which the economy stupid mixed in. You have this question of, are you better off 4 years ago? But I think the Bush factor is also not as important because of George W. Bush himself. Compare his ex-presidency to President Clinton. President Clinton has been extremely active in the public sphere. George Bush has been absent. He's been retired in Dallas. He rarely makes a public appearance. And when he does, it's escaping into an elevator to endorse Mitt Romney. He doesn't go on TV shows. And so I think as much as the president may try to make Bush a factor in this race, Bush is just, he's nowhere. He's invisible in American politics, which is a benefit to Mitt Romney.
But do you think by his own choice, or is he persona non grata, or it's just
no,
a,
I think
mutual.
By his own choice. I think he saw from his father that there's a new book out right now about the club of ex-presidents, and there's this idea that you really respect a president who's the incumbent, you give him space, and I think he also wants to give Mitt Romney some breathing room so he doesn't have his presence everywhere.
Polls, especially in May before November, I think are largely meaningless. But nonetheless, Dick, when you look at national polls, not at states and electoral votes, but when you look at national polls, you pretty much see the president and Mitt Romney within a margin of error.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've tightened up. They've tightened up in the last month. I think that's in part because during the extremely bruising Republican primary, Romney's numbers suffered, not necessarily because people had a strong opinion yet of Romney, and a lot of people still don't, as a matter of fact, but because, you know, sort of the nasty back and forth, the Republican primary is kind of like washed over on him. And so vis-a-vis Obama, he was losing, by a measure that some Democrats started to feel ridiculously smug about, like that, oh, this thing's in the bag. Mm-hmm. But now it's tightened up, and it's tightened up in swing states. I mean, we're really only looking at 9 or 10 states in this election ultimately. I mean, I don't want to go through them all, but, you know, obviously Virginia and Colorado, Nevada, Florida, some others, North Carolina, there's a bunch. And Obama has some slight leads in a lot of them, but it's really, really on the bubble. And I really think that, you know, regardless of whether one thinks that a president should take the hit for everything bad about an economy or not, which is that whole debate, it is politically speaking, it is an undertow. And he, for Obama, and he needs still to try to regenerate a lot of the enthusiasm among the people who, the voters who buoyed him in 2008, including young people.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with them is that young people are graduating college and then they're going back to live at home. So, you know, they may have cast their first vote 4 years ago for Obama. What are they going to do this time? So I think that's going to be a big part of it. And that I think is again baggage in the polls right now.
What do you think, Robert? And then we'll get back to our callers.
I think when you look at the polling, the most interesting thing to me is that Dick's right. The polls are closing in the swing states. You see in the most recent polls this week, Virginia, Ohio, Florida, Mitt Romney's catching up, but he's still 4 to 5 points behind. The biggest problem for the president is that he's below 50%. In all national polls, president keeps dancing around the high 40s, and that's not a great position for an incumbent. I think if President Obama can get past 50%, Mitt Romney will be truly worried, because if an incumbent's above 50% in the summer, it's very hard to beat him. But President Obama has not been able to break that margin for a long time, and I think Mitt Romney thinks that he can close that gap.
Let me get, looks like Frank from Center City, Philadelphia, to join our conversation. Frank, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Marty.
Hi there. You're on the air.
My point is we have the 99% versus the 1%, and people classically have short memories, and the working class people as well as the middle class, some in the middle class, vote against their interests. And you take John Boehner, who came from a working class family. He leads the charge against his own family and people in the community voting for the ultra-rich and the conservative vote. And it's absurd. As long as we have representative democracy, which is thems with the most bucks, we will never have participatory democracy, and people are myopic and non-participatory, and that's why we have the stuff that's going on.
All right, Frank, you said a lot there. Let me give Dick Pullman a chance to weigh in first.
I think much of what the caller was talking about is actually pieces of the Obama message about 99 versus 1, wage inequality, income inequality. And we were just talking a second ago about some key swing states. And I think part of what the caller was saying was part of what the core of the Obama message in what I think is in some ways the most important swing state, which is Ohio, which that's the argument they're trying to play that out there about haves versus have-nots. Ohio is really important because, as is often mentioned so much that it's a cliche, but a true one, that no Republican since the dawn of the Republican Party has ever been elected president without winning Ohio. Obama is ahead there by a few points now. It's going to be a serious, serious battleground. I mean, there's a lot of auto industry related jobs there that they're working there now, and the Obama people are going to again push that thing, saying, you know, that we say the auto industry as a bumper sticker message, and they're trying to, you know, push that, and basically saying that again it's the 1% that didn't try to save the auto industry.
What do you think, Robert?
I think the caller's point is really what this election's about. Is wealth going to be demonized or not? Is Mitt Romney's success in business a negative or a positive? Mitt Romney is unabashedly running as a pro-growth candidate. You can disagree with him, but he is not hiding from it. He's endorsed the Ryan budget, which is quite controversial. He is advocating across-the-board 20% tax cuts in all six brackets. And so he is not saying – he's trying to appeal to independents with his message, but on when it comes to the economy, he's running very much as a traditional Republican. And in states like Ohio, as Dick mentioned, sure, there's a concern that, for instance, John Kasich, the governor there, has stumbled with his labor dispute, but – it's going to come down to more than just labor and business. It's going to become about the economy and whether people believe in Mitt Romney's message.
And we're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation with Robert Costa, the voice you just heard, writes for National Review Online, and Dick Pullman, blogs for WHYY's Newsworks, talking about politics, campaign politics. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
The Wildwoods present a celebration of Heroes Festival May 25th through the 27th, paying tribute to America's military, veterans, and first responders. Information at wildwoodsnj.com/heroes. The Wildwoods support WHYY.
The 80 social service programs supported by the Catholic Charities Appeal work to assist people across the region, like the teenager who grew up on the streets who is now a certified business software specialist, or the young woman with Down syndrome who now has a job in retail. Loyal contributors, plus thousands of new and lapsed donors, are stepping up to help in these challenging times. But the challenges of those in need are harder than most of us may ever face. Learn how to help at CatholicCharitiesAppeal.org. Catholic Charities Appeal supports WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Is it possible there might finally be an answer to the disappearance of 6-year-old Aiden Pates? We'll remind ourselves how this one child in 1979 launched a national movement. Also, a conversation with one of the most popular bloggers, Jenny Lawson, the bloggess. Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Hey everybody, Jad here. Radiolab is coming to Philadelphia with a live show. We'll be joined on stage by Dimitri Martin, the musician Tao Nguyen, and the Palabolas Dance Theater. Come check us out at the Academy of Music on June 29th. Tickets are at radiolab.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. The Republican presidential primary was a rough-and-tumble contest, and it looks like the race to the White House will continue that rough-and-tumble nature. President Obama and Mitt Romney have been trading accusations, and it looks like every gaffe, every goof is magnified with all the relentless press coverage of this campaign season. And here to deconstruct the road to the White House and other political races, Robert Costa, writing for NRO, and Dick Pullman, blogging for WHYY's Newsworks, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Well, during the break, we were speculating about who Mitt Romney might pick for VP. Do you want to share your thoughts, Robert
Sure.
Costa?
It's early, and I know Mitt Romney's campaign right now has a list of about 40 names, and they're going to winnow that down to about 10 or 12. We're in the process right now where Mitt Romney's campaign is very quietly reaching out to key contenders and saying, are you open to being vetted? That's the first question anyone needs to answer, because if you're not open to being vetted, you can't be part of the process. So a guy like Marco Rubio is going to have to make a decision, the senator from Florida, about whether he even wants to have all of his background being examined by Team Romney. Mm. The top contenders in my mind, real easy to see. Mitt Romney wants to pick someone who reinforces his strength. Remember in 1992, Bill Clinton picks Al Gore. People said, why did Clinton pick Al Gore? He's a Southern senator. He's young. He's just like Clinton. Well, I think Romney's trying to do the same thing. He wants someone who's a little boring, maybe from the Midwest, has business instincts, is very focused on the economy, and maybe comes from a swing state. So who pops up, of course? Rob Portman, freshman senator from Ohio. But he's the former Bush budget director. Yeah. That brings some clouds over his candidacy for VP. Otherwise, Rubio remains a strong contender, very popular. Florida's important. Chris Christie, Governor of New Jersey. If Romney feels like it's August, it's right before the convention, campaign sagging, he needs a little fire, call the governor of New Jersey, who will give him some real pop. There's some other names here. Susana Martinez, governor of New Mexico, if you need a woman on the ticket. Kelly Ayotte, the new senator from New Hampshire, is also being mentioned. And Mike Huckabee has actually been floated as a name, the former governor of Arkansas, because Romney may feel like he needs to energize and enthuse evangelical voters who didn't go towards him in the primary. I think that's a little unexpected, probably more of a Portman type. Senator John Thune from South Dakota is another Portman type of senator who's very much focused on the economy, comes from the upper Midwest. So those are the names I'm hearing, but my bet, if you're a betting man, would be on Portman.
What do you think, Dick?
Well, I think their number one priority here is to do everything different from what John McCain did in 2008. And, you know, they want the un-Palin to a maximum degree. They don't want to have somebody sort of thrown at the public at the last second and have that person be controversial. They don't want any surprises. They want to basically do no harm, which is the more traditional way of doing these things. They don't want, you know, somebody going on an interview in October and saying, I don't know what newspapers I can name that I read every day. So Rob Portman, you know, makes a lot of sense to me exactly for what Robert was just saying. I mean, the 1992 comparison is good. You know, right. The reinforcing of, you know, it's like let's have two guys here who are focused on the economy. And
so boring
and
might be good in 2012. You're both saying
That's the Romney bet.
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's also a larger issue of whether a running mate can quote unquote deliver, you know, his own state. You know, that's happened in the past. Sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't. John Edwards did nothing for John Kerry in 2004 in North Carolina. On the other hand, North Carolina at that point had not been a winning state for Democrats for decades, whereas Ohio, you know, swings both ways.
Yeah, looks like you want to say something.
Just a real quick point about why Portman, just for people who are listening to think, okay, Portman may not swing you Ohio, but
or
why
who is Portman?
Or who is Portman? It's a great question. He was a congressman in the 90s, was elected in 1993 in a special election, Dartmouth grad, outdoor enthusiast, worked for Bush 41 in the White House, then became Bush budget director. He was Bush trade representative, took some time off, taught at Ohio State, then ran for Senate and won by a large margin in 2010. But why Portman? This is how politics has become so micro-targeted. He may not win you Ohio outright, but Portman comes from the Cincinnati suburbs, which is in the southwest corner of the state. And if you're going to win Ohio, you need to win the Cincinnati suburbs. So Romney's people are maybe thinking, forget Ohio. We need you just to win Cincinnati. That could be the key to winning Ohio. That could be the key to winning the election. That's how elections are run. They're thinking that at that micro level of how a candidate could help.
Well, let me throw out Joe Biden's name and an interesting vice president, to say the least. And it looks like he's been sent out to be the attack dog for the Obama reelection campaign. But interestingly, as the president said, he got a little over his skis on this gay marriage thing. But he did force the president to say probably what he really believed, that he was in support of gay marriage. Do you think that has hurt the president or
no,
not?
You're asking me.
I am asking.
Okay.
I don't. I threw a lot of stuff in.
Well, you know, every I think at this point, I think the White House, if basically they say to themselves, you know, if this is the last time that Joe Biden is going to basically, you know, fall over his skis, let it be on this issue and that's alone, because the polls have basically, all the polls that I've seen, of course, I wrote this with my heart in my mouth before any of the polls came out, where I said, I don't think gay marriage in May is not going to make much of a difference in November. And the polls have actually kind of borne that out, that it's sort of been a wash. So I don't really see, Biden is actually, this is the thing, he's actually been fairly disciplined and a good member of the team, and I message especially for Biden, for the first, you know, 3+ years. It's only because, you know, what happened on that Sunday a few weeks ago, you know, it was actually pretty rare that everybody's paying attention to it now. It was on such a cutting edge social issue. But for the most part, he's actually been good. And the speculation on some circles that, oh, well, he's going to Obama's going to replace him with Hillary Clinton and all that. You know, and that keeps coming up and it keeps coming up. It would be like such an act of it would be interpreted as such an act of desperation. It would have a long political downside. And I think actually, frankly, Hillary Clinton on that issue is I think anxious for a break. And maybe she would actually even reboot for 2016. I think that's one of the reasons Bill is campaigning so heavily this year.
Talk
for Obama.
Talk about microanalysis. Yes.
There it is. Well, that's what we're into here. That's what we get paid for.
I have nothing against it. Go ahead, and then we'll get back to our
real callers. Quick about Joe Biden. I think a lot of Democrats I speak to in Washington, they say, well, Biden, he's a bit of a clown sometimes. He's great. He comes from Pennsylvania. But couldn't we get someone better like Hillary Clinton on the ticket? The reason I don't think he's ever going to be replaced on the ticket, and I think why he's actually an asset for the president's team, is because President Obama has a famously chilly relationship with lawmakers on Capitol Hill, Democrats and Republicans alike. He's not the kind of guy who picks up a phone and even calls a Democratic senator just to hit the hay, to talk politics. Joe Biden is. Joe Biden has great relationships with Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell. He's respected on Capitol Hill. And during the fights over the stimulus and the president's health care bill, it was Biden who was a key legislative figure in those fights, not really the president. Mm-hmm. And so I think in a second term, you still want someone like Biden to be a liaison to Capitol Hill.
Let me get, looks like Kurt from Newtown Square to join our conversation. And Kurt, go ahead. You're on the air.
Great show. I'm sorry I missed it from the beginning. I'll have to catch the rest online.
You can certainly do that.
I had a comment for just a general thing. It seems to me that the Republican strategy here is complicated.
Yes.
Because what you're trying to say, if it's true that there's a lot of Bush alumni in this Romney campaign, it seems to me like your message is, yes, everything crashed, and this guy's not fixing it quick enough, but trust us, we're going to do the same thing again to make everything better. And I'm just remembering back, Obama had a thing during the 2010 that said something about, you crashed the car, you drove the car in the ditch, you're not helping me push it out.
You're slipping
and
Serbia's
now
on the
slide. You're criticizing me for not pushing it out quick enough, and no, I'm not giving you back the keys. That was kind of the message that I had gotten. And
right.
It seems to me that kind of plays here. And it seems very seems like a really uphill battle for the Republicans to push that.
Well, let me see what Robert Casa says. Do you see it that way?
That's a great point by the caller in the sense that the election is about tax cuts versus more government involvement in the economy. But Romney, I think, has some distance from the Bush team. He was not a member of Bush's cabinet. He is not particularly close to the Bush family. They have endorsed him, but they took a long time to endorse him. We just saw the W endorse him last week. And so I think what Romney has to do, though, is he's trying to run as a business candidate. He says, I'm not running on the Bush tax cuts. You never hear him use the phrase Bush tax cuts. It's the Romney tax cuts. It's the across-the-board 20% cut. It's his business focus, his appeal to small business. Every single public event, I've traveled around the country covering Governor Romney, and every event is a meeting with small business people. That's what he's running on. He's not running to reinstitute Bush policies. Now, is it smart politics for President Obama to say, all Romney's trying to do is bring back Bush? Of course, that could work for the Democrats, but it's not really the case. You don't see Romney ever even use Bush by name, and he's trying to define himself as someone, whether you like private equity or not, as someone who can come in and save USA Incorporated.
I'm looking at the clock here, and I do want to get back to our callers, but I do want to throw a couple of things on the table here. This is a little bit in the weeds, but the fact that Dick Lugar lost to a Tea Party candidate, and I'm so embarrassed, all of a sudden I forgot the state that Dick Lugar—
Indiana.
And thank you very much, that he represented. And both of you have written about this illuminating incident. How do you interpret Dick Lugar's loss? And this was a guy that's been in Congress a long, long time, known for working across the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Pullman.
Well, okay. It's he ran a bad campaign. I have to start by I don't think it was necessarily just a referendum by Indiana Republican primary voters on he's too moderate and therefore we're going to throw him out. I think it was a little bit. I think there might have been an element of that. There was some of the advertising was basically saying, he's not a real conservative, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it was also other things, other factors. He's 80 years old. He'd been there a long time. This is an anti-incumbent year. He hasn't lived in Indiana for years. He lives in a suburb of Washington. He geared up late, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the outcome is that it is one more sort of establishment Republican, if I can use that term. I hate some of these labels, but it's an establishment Republican, kind of center right Republican, who's going by the wayside. He was somebody who, on occasion, would reach across the aisle and work with Democrats on some issues. He also voted twice for Obama's Supreme Court nominees, which used to be a bipartisan tradition, but I think that was kind of held against him too. And he's being replaced by Richard Murdoch, I believe I have the right name correctly. Or he's being replaced by a guy who said, I'm not going to get the quote exactly, but he's basically been indicating that one of the things he thinks is wrong with Washington is that there's been a little bit too much bipartisanship, and his definition of bipartisanship is that the Democrats would come to their side and agree with what Republicans want to do. So this came up yesterday. I was did an interview with Colin Powell at the Free Library, and Powell brought it up. And his argument to the audience was, well, if he thinks there's too much bipartisanship and compromise in Washington, don't come to Washington. Because that's where Powell comes from, of course.
Indeed. Indeed. Your thoughts, Robert?
Dick Lugar had a lot of complicated problems. One was that he was not just considered a bipartisan figure in Washington, but the mentor to President Obama when the president was in the Senate. They were very close on a personal level. They worked together on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and that kind of haunted Dick Lugar in this primary. But in 2010, we saw Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell, some, let's say, kooky candidates for U.S. Senate on the Republican side, who were really not ready for prime time. What happened in Indiana with Dick Lugar versus Richard Murdoch was not a Sharon Angle experience. Richard Murdoch is a twice-elected treasurer of Indiana. He's an establishment politician in his own way. And Dick Lugar, as Dick Pullman mentioned, was not really considered just the moderate, but he had residency problems. Mm. There was a question about whether his driver's license was valid, whether he even lived in the state. And so what we saw from Lugar was an inability to connect with the Tea Party. He made snide remarks about the Tea Party throughout the course of the campaign in a way that Orrin Hatch, for instance, in Utah, who's in a similar primary battle, has really wooed the Tea Party in a way that Lugar never did. And Hatch really underestimated the idea that if you're going to be a senator from a state, you better be able to back up your residency, because there was a question of whether even Lugar could be on the ballot at some point. And that really fueled Murdoch to be not only the guy who can say it's time for Lugar to go home, but Lugar doesn't even call this home anymore.
Let me throw another issue on the table here, and this is the trial of John Edwards, which I think everyone has been reading with their jaw dropping. And talk about a messy personal and political life. And to you, what's your – we don't know what the verdict is, obviously. Yeah. And it's a complicated story, but it involves an affair, a child out of wedlock, a dying wife, money from rich people that was washing through this his candidacy.
Right. Yeah,
what's your takeaway from this?
Well, there will be, in a year or two, apparently, a film about this by Aaron Sorkin, who has bought the rights, and I'm already waiting for it. This is what I think. This is actually, there is an issue here about whether we're waiting for the verdict. You know, should he go to jail for this? Is it an illegal campaign contribution, or is it just a sort of a personal gift to try to sort of clean up his personal life in the midst of trying to run for president? That's kind of where the legal demarcation is. And I actually think that on this particular – this might be an issue where I'm actually in agreement with National Review, because we've actually both written – I forget who it was at National Review who wrote this, but I remember seeing this. We've actually both written that we don't necessarily believe he should go to jail, that moral sin is not necessarily a crime, and maybe this is an example of criminalizing bad and sleazy politics. And you know, my personal take on it is that he has been the national shame is in many ways a sufficient punishment for him.
What do you think, Robert?
There was a recent poll about John Edwards, and it said, how popular is he? What's his approval rating? And the number that came back was 3%, and the margin of error on the poll was 3%. So there may be 0% favorability towards Senator Edwards around the country. But I think Dick brings up a great point, that this is a shameful situation. A former United States senator running for president of the United States went to a Bunny Mellon, who I think was near 100 years old, asked her to make payments to his mistress. Everyone rolls their eyes at this and said this is absurd. It's a sin, perhaps, what Edwards did. But does he deserve to go to jail? Well, he didn't use campaign cash. And so the jury, I think, is having this deliberation right now that we don't like what John Edwards did. But if he didn't use official campaign cash, you know what? It's not that much of a legal problem.
And maybe zero popularity is punishment enough. Well, Robert Costa, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Nice to have you in the studio with us.
Great to be here.
And he's a political reporter for National Review, political analyst for CNBC. Dick Pullman, always a pleasure. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. It was fun.
It was fun as well for us. And he blogs at WHYY's Newsworks, writes a weekly column for the Philadelphia Inquirer, also writer in residence at the University of Pennsylvania. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program, including Facebook. You can check out our guests. We put them on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.